very pleased to welcome Val Page back. Val's been in a couple of times to talk about other books that she's read, either with her reading group or on her own. I'm particularly pleased with the one that she chose for our next chat because it's by Graham Greene. And I'd almost forgotten about Graham Greene because it's so long ago that I read some of his books, and there are many of his books I'd never read. Of course, he was a local boy. He was really brought up in the beginning in Berkhamsted. His father was headmaster eventually of Berkhamsted School. And he then went away to Oxford. He suffered from a certain amount of depression. He became a Catholic later in life. And he was described by many, including William Faulkner and other writers, as one of the greatest English writers, English fiction writers. And he's got a huge amount of work that anybody can dip into at any stage. I mean, the most famous is probably Brighton Rock. It's probably the one that's most known. But then there's also the script which he wrote for The Third Man, which was a very famous film. And then there are many others, The Sound and the Fury, The Quiet American. Just fabulous writing. He was often called a Catholic novelist, and he hated that. He said, no, he's a novelist who happens to be a Catholic. Mm-hmm. But the one that you've chosen for us, which is called The Power and the Glory, which I had not read before, and I'm delighted to have read it because I really enjoyed it. Of course, those words are taken from the end of the Lord's Prayer. Thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory. And because it's about a priest in Mexico. Let's try and set the scene before we get into the book itself. The first character is not one that matters very much. Mr. Tench is a dentist, but he's used as a device to lead us into the story. Let's listen to a little bit at the beginning of the novel, which sets the context.
Mr. Tench went out to look for his ether cylinder into the blazing Mexican sun and the bleaching dust. A few vultures looked down from the roof with shabby indifference. He wasn't carrion yet. A faint feeling of rebellion stirred in Mr. Tench's heart, and he wrenched up a piece of the road with splintering fingernails and tossed it feebly towards them. One rose and flapped across the town. Over the tiny plaza, over the bust of an ex-president, ex-general, ex-human being, over the two stalls which sold mineral water, towards the river and the sea. It wouldn't find anything there. The sharks looked after the carrion on that side. Mr. Tench went on across the plaza. He said buenos dias to a man with a gun who sat in a small patch of shade against a wall. But it wasn't like England. The man said nothing at all, just stared malevolently up at Mr. Tench, as if he had never had any dealings with a foreigner, as if Mr. Tench was not responsible for his two gold bicuspid teeth. Mr. Tench went sweating by, past the treasury, which had once been a church, towards the quay. Halfway across, he suddenly forgot what he had come out for. A glass of mineral water? That was all there was to drink in this prohibition state, except beer, but that was a government monopoly and too expensive, except for special occasions.
So there we have it, Val. We know we're in Mexico. We don't know the main character yet, because he hasn't come in. We know he's an ominous mood.
It was a very bad time for Mexico. I have a feeling it's the 1920s, and religion was outlawed. The best way of outlawing religion is not to knock down all the churches. The churches were closed, but to get rid of the priests. And the priests were either made to get married, in which case they were no longer priests, or they were shot. And in this book, there is one little priest. He is the main character. And it's interesting, I think, that in this book, the three main protagonists are never named. The priest is just called the whiskey priest. The lieutenant, who hates him and is after him and trying to get him, is just called the lieutenant. And the mixed race chap who dogs the whiskey priest's heels all through the book is just called the mestizo, which in Mexico, it's normally mixture of a Spanish American and an Indian American. He's just called the mestizo. The minor characters in that are given names, but it's as if to say they're just the background for what goes on. The priest, we feel very strongly for him. I think he's probably an alcoholic. He drinks whiskey and he is desperately trying to get across the border because he knows if he's caught, he will be shot.
And that's the border out of Mexico into the USA.
Yes, And the whole journey is not just a journey across Mexico for him, but it's a journey through his past life for him. Because as a priest, he had the best of life. He was well-dressed. He had a good life. He had good food and he had plenty to drink. And as he goes through Mexico, he's beginning to come to terms with what it's like to be an ordinary person and how he feels he's let himself down and let everybody else down. He comes over as a really, really good man. He is ashamed of himself because he has a child. It's interesting that at one point, when he is caught with drink as he's trying to escape Mexico and he's put into prison, the lieutenant is there and their lieutenant is chasing him all over Mexico. There's a big picture of him on the wall and the lieutenant doesn't recognise him. Unbeknown to the lieutenant, while the priest is having a perfectly dreadful time in the prison, which is awful, full of people who are sort of dregs of society, really, and there's no facilities, so people are being sick and people are urinating and it's smelly and horrible. Nevertheless, they know he's a priest. And these people who are really at the bottom of society don't betray him. There is a reward which the mestizo is after, which I think started at 500 pesos and then it went up to 700 pesos. And the mestizo will be quite happy to betray him. And the priest knows this. But when the priest, at the end of his time in the prison, he's made to slop out. He's made to clean everything out. And then he reports to the lieutenant, thinking, this is the end of me. This is when I'll be shot. The lieutenant, who hates him and has dogged his footsteps, doesn't recognise him. And says to him, how are you going to cope? You haven't got any money. And he gives him 5 pesos. And the priest says to him, you're a good man. And that is just the most amazing bit of the story, that these two recognise each other as good people. And it's so clear from the very beginning of the story that the priest is a very good man. He is so ashamed of his actions. He's so ashamed of what he's fallen down to that he doesn't see that he's a good man. He's so ashamed of having a child. But when he's trying to get away, people send for him. They know he's there. He knows that delaying his exit would probably lead to his death. But he still can't resist. If somebody wants to make a confession, he goes.
But wherever he goes, if the villagers help him, that's very dangerous for them, isn't it? Mm. Because the lieutenant has a very simple rule, which is that wherever he comes across any evidence that they've harboured a priest, then he will take action against them.
I think he brought that out particularly when he was after the whiskey priest. And it meant that when he went to villages who wanted him to come, wanted him desperately to hear their confessions, because there were no priests and they hadn't been able to make their confessions, life was very hard for them. They hadn't much to eat, they had no jobs, they had no money, and they were on the verge of starvation, a lot of the people in the villages. They didn't want to die unshriven. They wanted the priest to come, and so he would go. And he would hear their confessions on a makeshift altar, even though he knew that every time he did this, he was laying himself open to someone who wanted to betray him for the money. And he knew how poor they were. And he knew that he would forgive them if they did this because they were so poor. You can't help but feel that this is a really, really good man. And we won't spoil the ending, will we?
No, we mustn't spoil the ending. He is a really good man, but there's also this ambivalence, of course, isn't there? Because there's the two sides to him. It is his devotion to his role as a priest, his job to hear confession, to help the faithful onwards towards heaven or to get through life, which is pretty unpleasant. Mm. But he's got a mixed past. He himself recognises, and it seems to come through the character himself. It demonstrates his ambivalence and his awareness of his frailty.
The routine of his life, like a dam, was cracked, and forgetfulness came dribbling through, wiping out this and that. 5 years ago, he'd given way to despair, the unforgivable sin. And he was going back now to the scene of his despair with a curious lightning in the heart. For he had got over despair too. He was a bad priest, he knew it. They had a word for his kind, a whiskey priest. But every failure dropped out of sight and mind. Somewhere they accumulated in secret, the rubble of his failures. One day they would choke up, he supposed, altogether, the source of grace. Till then he carried on, with spells of fear, weariness, with a shamefaced lightness of heart. The mule splashed across the clearing, and they entered the forest again. Now that he no longer despaired, it didn't mean, of course, that he wasn't damned. It was simply that, after a time, the mystery became too great. A damned man putting God into the mouths of men. An odd sort of servant, that, for the devil.
As I said, as he goes on this journey through Mexico, he himself becomes more aware of what he's done in the past, of the good life he's had, at the expense of the poorer people. And that becomes more and more a journey through his own life to him, rather than just a journey to get away.
He says the lieutenant is a good man, but the lieutenant has, well, it doesn't do very nice things.
No, he doesn't.
And yet the priest sees the goodness in him. The lieutenant is the representative of this state, which is effectively a socialist state, determined to get rid of Catholicism once and forever. And it closes the churches, say it persecutes the priests, drives them away, or makes them change their lifestyle so they can't be priests. Mm. The lieutenant must have a backstory. There must be some reason why he's doing this. Why does he hate the church? Why does he hate the priests?
The lieutenant tapped his polished boot impatiently. There, the chief said. A large number of people sat round a table. Young girls in white muslin. Older women with untidy hair and harassed expressions. A few men peered shyly and solicitously out of the background. All the faces were made up of small dots. It was a newspaper photograph of a First Communion party taken years ago. A youngish man in a Roman collar sat among the women. You could imagine him petted with small delicacies, preserved for their use in that stifling atmosphere of intimacy and respect. He sat there, plump, with protuberant eyes, bubbling with harmless feminine jokes. It was taken years ago, said the chief. He looks like all the rest, the lieutenant said. It was obscure, but you could read into the smudgy photograph a well-shaved, well-powdered jowl much too developed for his age. The good things of life had come to him too early, the respect of his contemporaries, a safe livelihood. The trite religious word upon the tongue, the joke to ease the way, the ready acceptance of other people's homage. A happy man. A natural hatred, as between dog and dog, stirred in the lieutenant's bowels.
He really hated him.
Yes. So we know that there's a backstory. We don't know the whole story, but after all, he is a representative of the state that is fighting against Catholicism, determined to change Mexico once and forever. It's real hatred on the lieutenant's part, isn't
it? It is real hatred. It's a personal vendetta he's got against the priest, one that obviously must have other duties, and yet he's dogging his steps all over Mexico, and to the extent that he does take a boy and shoots him because people in the village won't tell him where the priest is or that the priest has even been.
Often hatred of religion is driven by something that happens in childhood or that has happened to something else. But we don't really know. We don't really find that out. But it's not uncommon.
Mm. Have you ever read any of the Don Camillo books? Italian ones. Yeah. And Don Camillo is a little Italian priest, and this is just after the war. And his nemesis is the mayor, who's a communist. Mm. But at basis, because they have fought together in the war, they're friends. But the hatred on the surface is there the whole time. What I like so much about this book is I've never been to Mexico, but you feel you know it so well. He sets the scene, and the whiskey priest, you feel, if you met him, you would know him. He's a shabby creature. He's not wearing his grand robes like he used to, but he's still got the power. And the priest that he meets, that he knew, who'd been made to get married, feels that he's not a priest anymore, but there must be something about himself, he feels, because he has the power to change wine into blood and a wafer into flesh. So he feels he's got that power still, even though he's been demoted, humiliated. Children of the village laugh at him because he's got married and he's not a priest anymore. The whiskey priest, there is just something you feel you'd like to get to know him. You'd like him as a friend.
It's interesting you described him at the beginning as the little priest.
Yes.
You have a sense that he's physically not huge. Mm. I'm not sure whether it says that, but that's the impression that you get out of this.
Yes, yes.
And, I mean, he's often on horseback or on mule.
On a mule.
On a mule, isn't it? That's right.
Well, you see, that was another thing about the mule. He'd got this old mule, but when the mestizo, who was dogging his footsteps, became sick, he sat him on the mule and he walked beside him. He was a really, really good man.
Mm. It's this all the time. The imagery is there, isn't it? The sort of the Christ-like figure that he's trying to emulate in his life, and yet he knows he's failed again.
Yes,
is what you might call the. I think you called it when we were talking earlier about the intellectual honesty of this priest's understanding, which is again illustrated frequently in the book.
Yes, this is the thing that he gets to know himself. So much more as he goes on this dreadful journey across Mexico.
You said that Graham Greene gives us a very clear picture. I mean, you really do sense the where you are and the environment in which they're operating. And he's very good at doing that, I think, in all of the books of his that I've ever come across that works very well. He really digs into it. I was looking it up, and part of my digging into the background, he'd actually been, Graham Greene himself had been to Mexico.
He had.
There's two stories about why he went there. One was to do a research, as it were, not for this book, but he wrote a documentary piece about the country, which is quite different from this fiction, obviously. Another reason that he went there, because he was sent there to escape from the fact that he was about to be sued because he'd written a review, because he was a journalist, he'd written a review about a film, and the producers didn't like what he'd written and they threatened to sue him and his publisher. So rather than go through all that, he went off to Mexico, where there was no extradition law, so he couldn't be taken away to the USA, as it would have been, ironically. He really explored the country, and it was at this time when there was this battle between the socialist state, as it was then, that had taken over Mexico and was closing churches and was driving priests. So it's really based upon actual fact.
Yeah, he makes the background live. He makes the characters live. And when you finish the book, you feel that you've got to know the people, the main characters in it. The mestizo, who cannot help but betray the priest. The priest, who is doing his best to be a priest, as he'd always wanted to be. Not as he's been. And the lieutenant, who is so consumed with hatred that his one aim in life is not to be a good lieutenant, it's to shoot this one little priest.
Thank you very much, Val. The Power and the Glory by Graham Greene was read by Sandy Morrison. We're grateful to Calibre Audio for allowing us to use a copy of this recording. Calibre Audio is a charity specialising in providing audiobooks on CD or memory stick for those who otherwise would not be able to access them. And full details of this charity and of how it operates can be found on their website, www.calibre.org.uk. The music accompanying this edition of the Talking Bookshelf is called Good Times. It was composed and recorded by Goffby of Kenilworth, who's very generously given us permission to use his music.